Welcome to the podcast On Things Above, a weekly discussion and devotion rooted in the Word of God and reaching toward heaven above.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. Today we'll be talking about the faith of Joseph, and joining us for this episode is Brother Lou Corey, who was my former junior high and I think high school Bible class teacher. So tell us how the Corey family has been doing and what stood out to you about the faith of Joseph.
The family's doing fine. Gina and myself, I'm working actually a staggered schedule with my job. I can do that from home. Gina's been working it from home, teaching from home. We have an office upstairs for her, and I have an office downstairs. Riley is doing okay. She's moved back with us, and she's home now. Reed and Reagan and Corey and Ellie are doing fine. We've seen them recently, and they're doing really good up in Leander. So everybody's doing real well, trying to make it through this pandemic. But the reason why I chose Joseph was because he encountered great obstacles, great hardships, and he made unbelievable choices that are great examples for us. I also like that we can glean some really good applications, because a lot of times I like to make applications whenever I'm talking, doing a Bible class, and really to verbalize it, to actually make myself better whenever I make these applications. So it's kind of putting myself to the test when I verbalize and trying to push me to do better. But yeah, I think Joseph was great in the way he responded to the hardships that he endured.
Well, we're glad to hear that everybody's doing well. And Joseph is one of my favorite characters in all the Bible. And I think really of all the Old Testament parallels, I think his life maybe best parallels the story of Jesus. So maybe we can look at that later if we have time. But let's go back to Genesis and talk about his example of faith for us.
Okay, I'm going to start in Genesis 37. And it says there that Jacob and his family are living in Canaan, and Joseph is pasturing the flock with his brothers, and it states that he's 17 years old. So he's a young man at this time. And it says that Joseph gives his father a bad report about his brothers, and this obviously causes some animosity between he and his brothers. And in verse 3, it states that Jacob loved Joseph more than his brothers. And because it says that he was the son of his old age, but I think more it was because of Joseph being the son of Rachel, who Jacob loved the most. Anyway, Jacob shows favoritism towards Joseph by giving him a very colored tunic, which really causes his brothers to hate him even more. It actually says that the brothers could see that Jacob had more love for Joseph than for them. On top of this, Joseph receives a dream. In verses 6 through 8, it says, he said to them, "Please listen to this dream which I have had. For behold, we are binding sheaves in the field. And lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect. And behold, your sheaves gathered around and bound down to me, to my sheaf." Then his brother said to him, "Are you actually going to reign over us, or are you really going to rule over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Now he still had another dream and related it to his brothers and said, "Lo, I've still had another dream. And behold, the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." And he related it to his father and to his brothers. And his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream that you've had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come and bow yourselves down before you to the ground?" And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. So a few observations I have about this is, the first one was, I'm really not sure why God allowed for a man to have more than one wife back here. I mean, life's hard enough just when you and your wife raising the kids of the one wife, much less when you start throwing in multiple sons from multiple women. And on top of this, Jacob showed favoritism on top of that, and it was obvious to his other sons. So it was just from that right there, that was kind of a recipe for disaster. The second observation I have is that Joseph was blessed by his father. And just like we're blessed by our Heavenly Father, Joseph, he proudly wore that tunic. And the question I have is, do we as Christians proudly wear the name of Christian, even though those around us may ridicule or have disdain like Joseph's brothers had for him? Or do we as a Christian, we wear the name whenever we're at church or whenever we're all around our church family? The third observation I'd say was Joseph was 17 years old, and he was young. And whenever he was relaying these dreams, it was obvious to Joseph that he was favored of God and that he was going to become a ruler or become placed in a place of power. And so not only was he favored by his earthly father, but he was also favored by his heavenly father. But whenever he relayed these dreams, I know he was really excited to be favored by God, but whenever he relayed these dreams, it was pretty self-centered. He didn't really have any empathy how it affected his brothers or how it affected his parents. And the lesson for us is, I know me personally, when I first became a Christian, I was really on fire. I was really excited about my relationship with Jesus. And I did a lot of studying, and I really wanted to know how to please God. And so when you're like that and you're really motivated, you have to look at your motives, because I look at it sometimes and I'm thinking, I want to show how much I know about the Bible, how much I've learned and how much I know. And I want to prove that you're wrong in this situation and I'm right if you would just listen to me. And so I think for us, a lot of times we need to show some care and concern whenever we're talking about spiritual things and look at our motive when we're, when we endure those things. I will say this though about Joseph, when he actually endures hardship later in his life, he never focuses anymore on himself. It's all his speech and everything. It's about God and not about himself. Now let's move on down to verse 12. His brothers are pasturing the flock in Shechem. And so Jacob, he sends Joseph to check on the welfare of his brothers and on the welfare of the flock. And so he starts on to Shechem. And by the time he gets to Shechem, the brothers have gone to Dothan. And he sees a man there and tells him that the brothers have moved on to Dothan. So Joseph starts out to Dothan. And while he's coming to Dothan, it says in verse 18 that the brothers see Joseph from a distance. And probably he's wearing that varicolored tunic so they can see. And they say, here comes that dreamer. And so they plot to kill Joseph and throw him in a pit. And Reuben doesn't want to do that. Reuben, his idea is he's going to rescue him and he's going to try to get in his father's good graces. But when Joseph actually arrives, they strip the tunic off of him and they throw him into the pit. Not sure what happens to Reuben after this, but they're having a meal. The brothers are sitting in the meal while Joseph's in the pit, and they see a caravan of Ishmaelites. And Judah comes up with the great idea that, hey, let's make some money off the deal. So this way we make a profit and we don't have to worry about killing him. We don't have to cover. There's not going to be any cover up for the bloodshed. And so that seemed good to the brothers. And so they sell Joseph to the Ishmaelites and the Ishmaelites head to Egypt. Reuben returns and finds out that Joseph's not there. They take the tunic, they slaughter a goat, they put the blood on the tunic, they give it to Jacob. And, really to deceive Jacob into thinking that Joseph was killed. They really don't say he was killed, but they just kind of give him the tunic and say, does this look familiar to you? So chapter 37 ends with Joseph actually being sold to Potiphar, who was an officer of Pharaoh in Egypt. That brings us to chapter 39. And in chapter 39, it states several times that the Lord was with Joseph. This is in verse 2. Verse 3, 21 and 23. And so because the Lord was with Joseph, he becomes very successful. I'm not sure if this is actually miraculous manifestation from God or if it's God's providence working with Joseph's talents. Not really sure, but either way, everything that Joseph does, he prospers in it. And Potiphar actually recognizes this. And so that being said, he puts Joseph in charge of, as overseer of everything in his house and everything that he owned. And so Potiphar, actually, he starts prospering because the Lord is helping Joseph become successful. In verse 6 of chapter 39, it says that Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and Potiphar's wife actually makes sexual advances towards Joseph. Joseph refuses these advances. He talks about his position, but ultimately in verse 9, he says, "How can I do this great evil and sin against God?" So these advances, this happens day after day. This wasn't a one-time thing. And Joseph continually refuses her advances. But she waits for an opportune time when there was no men around in the house. And she again tries to get Joseph to lie with her. And Joseph actually flees. Notice that he didn't wait around, and he didn't contemplate the circumstances and the consequences. He actually fled. He got out of the situation. In fleeing the situation, he leaves his garment behind, and the wife takes the garment, and he cries out to the men and also to her husband, for lack of a better way to put it, that Joseph tried to rape her. And she does this to the men and to Potiphar, and obviously Potiphar's furious and puts Joseph in jail. And so in verse 21, it says that the chief jailer showed Joseph kindness because the Lord was with Joseph. Joseph is put in charge of all the prisoners, and he continues to prosper. And that takes us to the end of chapter 39. Now, a couple of observations from this section was that the Lord caused Joseph to prosper. But notice Joseph took advantage of the talent he was blessed with. He didn't dwell on the bad things that had happened to him. And we all have some talent that the Lord's blessed us with. I'll tell you several examples that I actually see in the church there. We have some individuals that are great song leaders. Some possess great Bible wisdom. Some are great at carrying on a conversation. Some have great work ethics. Some individuals are great cooks, and they show great hospitality, and they're really good at benevolence. Some are very good at making money, and they're very generous with their money towards the church. Some have great sense of humor and great wit. Some have great remembrance of the scripture and great oratory skills. And some are great at writing notes and sending cards. But my question is, how do you use your talent? Can people see that you are taking advantage of the talent that God gave you or granted you for the good of the gospel? The second thing was that Joseph was a young man. He's probably, obviously he said he was 17, 8, but he may be 18 or 19 years old at this time. And being that, he had sexual urges. On top of that, he had it all. He was a good-looking guy. He was successful. He was powerful. He could have easily justified to himself that, hey, I deserve some happiness because of the things that have happened to me. But he sees things from an eternal perspective. He makes no mention of the physical consequences that could have happened to him. Indeed, he still suffers those physical consequences, but he doesn't dwell on that, or he doesn't say that. He says he does not want to sin against God. What a great example of confidence and faith in God. Do we take the time to see how our actions, or even sometimes our interactions, how that affects God instead of just looking at the consequences of right here and right now? How is this going to affect me? And I think that's just a great, great example for us to actually look at the eternal perspective in our actions and our inactions.
I remember just a couple years ago, the Vacation Bible School was over the life of Joseph. And during the time for the skit, we got to the part about the jealousy and the hatred of Joseph's brothers and how it states three times how much they hated Joseph. And when we got to that part, they had the little kids join in and say they hated him even more. And that's how Joseph's life was. Just when it seemed like it couldn't get any worse, it did. It got even worse. And that it was just kind of a downward spiral. When there was a seemed like a glimpse of hope, it was smothered out. And that was kind of the first half of his story. And through all these highs and lows where things seemed to get worse and worse, surely Joseph had moments like you talked about where he thought about just giving up, just giving in for one moment. But instead, he learned what the Apostle Paul describes as the secret of contentment over in Philippians 4. So, Bubba, let's talk about that passage there for a moment.
Well, Paul, like Joseph, had his own highs and lows. As Lou just told us, Joseph went from favoritism to being thrown in a pit, from being in charge of Potiphar's house to being in prison, and then being second command in Pharaoh. But the one thing that was constant, as Lou said, is that the Lord was with Joseph. Well, when Paul writes to the church at Philippi, he writes to them about their contribution that they made to him in his preaching. And he wants to let them know that was not the reason that he was rejoicing, even in prison. He was appreciative of their gift. But this is what he said in Philippians 4 in verse 11. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. So look at Paul's highs and lows. He had been a Pharisee and the Hebrew of Hebrews, and he gave that all up. He had lived in prosperity and in humble means. He had been filled, going hungry. He had been living in abundance and suffering need. Well, how did he get through that? What was it that he did to survive? Two times he said he had learned something. Now, Paul was educated at the feet of Gamaliel, but that's not where he learned this secret. This he learned at the feet of the master teacher. I have learned to be content. It has been said that America lives in one of two tents, contentment or discontentment. And a lot of people think that when you're not satisfied, that means I need more stuff. I need another marriage. I need a new job. But Paul said the thing that made him content and constant was that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's the secret. It's not a secret in that it's been covered up and you can't discover it. It's the secret in that the mystery has been revealed. If you want to have contentment and joy through the highs and lows in life, you can only do that through Jesus Christ. The Lord has to be with you. Otherwise, it's just going to be adding failure to failure.
You mentioned how Philippians is one of Paul's prison epistles. And I also like how in chapter 1, after his introduction, he writes, "Now I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and to everyone else." So even as he's in prison, he says, I know what this looks like on the outside. I know how this may seem very discouraging, but I'm still finding ways to serve Christ. I'm still finding ways to further the gospel. And this is actually God using this moment for good, which sounds a lot like the second half of Joseph's story. So let's pick back up there in Genesis chapter 40.
In Genesis 40, Joseph has been put in jail and he's been made the captain or overseer of the prisoners. And he comes in contact with the chief cupbearer and the chief baker of the king who has become infuriated with him and put him into the jail. The cupbearer and the baker, they have a dream on the same night. And notice in verse 8, Joseph says, Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell the dreams to me. I just like to make that notification that notice how each time Joseph speaks, God's always in his conversations. I just think that's a great example for us that it's so easy in his conversations. God is always mentioned in his conversations. But in verses 9 through 15, the cupbearer tells his dream. And Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Within three more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you will put Pharaoh's cup to his hand according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer. Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For I was in fact kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing that they should have put me in this dungeon. And then he goes, and the chief baker sees that it was a good report or a good interpretation. So he relays his dream to Joseph. Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. Within three more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you, and you will hang on a tree, and the birds will eat from the flesh of you. And the rest of chapter 40 talks about that's exactly what came to pass, just the way Joseph interpreted. In verse 23, it says, yet the cupbearer did not remember Joseph. But the observation here I have for this section is that Joseph gives God the credit. It wasn't anything in Joseph, but it was actually God doing the interpretation. And notice also that Joseph, he's not afraid to tell the difficult part to the baker. He didn't say, well, you know, if I were you, I'd just kind of lay low in the prison. And I think that's good for us, because he said, I think we need to ask ourselves, do we have the ability to say the difficult things along with the good things as it relates to spiritual matters? Again, whenever we do this, we do that with a sense of caring for their soul, but can we have the difficult conversation like Joseph did? And just like Joseph did, do we say that this is what God says through his word? This isn't my interpretation. I like to say it this way. I'm just the messenger. The power's in the message, you know? And so can we say the difficult things? But if you go on to chapter 41, it says after 2 years, so the chief cupbearer forgot about him. And then after 2 years, Pharaoh has a dream. So he has this dream and he doesn't have anybody to interpret. The cupbearer overhears that, and he remembers that there's a Hebrew youngster in the jail that he can interpret dreams. And so Pharaoh asked for Joseph to come. And in verse 15, it says, I've had a dream, but no one can interpret it. Have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. But notice in verse 16, Joseph says, it's not in me. It's God. God will give Pharaoh the favorable answer. And so Pharaoh tells him the dream. And in verse 25, Joseph interprets the dream. And they're one and the same. The seven good cows and the seven plump ears are 7 years of plenty in the harvest. And then the seven lean and ugly cows and the seven thin ears of are 7 years of famine. And so he interprets the dream for him. And over in verse 39, Pharaoh recognized that God's actually informed Joseph of this. So he puts Joseph in charge. And so Joseph's in second in command only to Pharaoh. And notice in verse 45, Pharaoh gives Asenath to Joseph as a wife. And in verse 46, it says that he's 30 years old when these things happen. In verse 50, Joseph has two sons, Manasseh. Notice what he names him. God has made me forget all my trouble in my father's household. And then Ephraim, God has made me fruitful in my land, in the land of my affliction. Again, God never leaves his side. God is always in his conversations. And so that leads us up to chapter 42, where the famine is severe. And Jacob hears that there is grain in Egypt. So he sends 10 of his sons to Egypt to go get food, but he keeps Benjamin because he doesn't want any harm to come to him. And so verse 6 of chapter 42, the brothers go to Egypt, and obviously Joseph's in a position of power, so they bow down to Joseph. Joseph recognizes his brothers, but he doesn't reveal himself to them. Joseph speaks harshly to them and actually accuses them of being spies. Verse 15, he tells them that I'm going to hold you here until your youngest brother is brought to him. So they arrive home. They tell Jacob what happened. Jacob is very reluctant to let Benjamin go, but the food actually runs out. And so he's kind of forced to end the decision. And Judah makes assurances that, hey, nothing's going to happen to Benjamin. Benjamin will be fine. And so they actually put double the money in the bags and some of the breast products, and they actually go back to Egypt. And in chapter 43, verse 16, Joseph sees Benjamin, and he actually makes a feast for them. And after the feast, it gets into chapter 44, after the feast, Joseph instructs his servants to fill each man's sack with the food and money. But he tells his house steward to put his silver cup in Benjamin's sack. And so they all leave and they head back for Canaan. The steward finds the brothers. They look and they said, "You've been accused of stealing something from my master." They open up all their sacks, and the cup's found in Benjamin's sack. And so they go back to Joseph, and Judah pleads for Joseph to take him instead of Benjamin. And this leads us up to chapter 45, where Joseph, he can't stand it anymore. He sends everyone out of the house except for his brothers, and he reveals himself to his brothers. And I love what he says there in verse 5 of chapter 45. It says, "And now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." In verse 7, "And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it is not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all the household of ruler over all the land of Egypt." So there is no disdain for his brothers. There's no revenge. There's no, "I got you now," nothing like that. And also in chapter 50 in verses 19 through 20, the brothers are still worried after the death of Jacob. But Joseph states again in verses 19 and 20 of chapter 50, "But Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I God in God's place? And as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive.'" And so the observations that I have here, that Joseph shows, he showed great, great faith in God when he easily could have said, "I told you you were going to bow down before me, and now I'm going to be putting you in prison. I'm going to kill you because I'm the ruler here." But Joseph, he sees the big picture. He gets it. It was God being in control, using him to save his brothers and his family's lives. And Joseph gives all the credit to God. There's no selfishness in him at all. I've been listening. The one good thing about the pandemic and working at home, I've been able to hear a lot of podcasts from different individuals, a lot of Bible classes. And I hear listening to Chris Emerson and Reagan McClenney, their Bible studies over Hebrews 11. And they continually make this comment that the individuals in Hebrews 11, they make up those great cloud of witnesses in Hebrews 12. And they're all pointing us towards Jesus. So just like God used Joseph to save his family, God uses his son Jesus to save us. The second observation I have is that Joseph, he encountered several moment of truth events in his life. He always responded with great faith in every opportunity. As for us, we're going to incur hardships in life. There might not be to the extent that Joseph had, but how are we going to respond to these hardships or these opportunities? Are we going to focus on ourselves and we're going to have a pity party for ourselves, or Are we going to see the big picture like Joseph did and see it as an opportunity to please God and bring honor and glory to Him? The last observation I'd say that I look at Joseph and I say to myself, wow, you know, he really gets it. I don't know if I could have ever handled anything like that the way he did. But you know what? That's okay, because we're not cookie-cutter Christians. We're all individuals. We have our own little idiosyncrasies. We have our strengths and our weakness. And, you know, we're not all going to be a Joseph, but we all can strive to be the best version of ourselves in every obstacle or opportunity that we consider.
Going back to that summer of VBS, I came home from Camp Friends the day before that it started, and I thought that I could kind of watch the skits play out from a safe distance, and somehow I got roped into playing Joseph. But I still remember the last line from that, which was what you mentioned from Genesis 50, where Joseph said to his brothers, "You meant this for evil, but God meant this for good, to bring about the salvation of many." And I think that verse pretty well sums up the life of Joseph and his extraordinary faith, that no matter his circumstances, he chose to be content and he chose to trust in the promises of God, who causes all things to work together for good. That leads us to the last act of faith in Joseph's life. And maybe to our surprise, it's the one thing that of all of Joseph's life, the Hebrew writer makes mention of there in chapter 11. So Bubba, let's look at what the Hebrew writer points to as possibly his greatest act of faith.
Yeah, that's the surprise, isn't it? Of all that material, that rich material we find in Genesis that Lewis has brought us through, the thing that finds mention in Hebrews 11 is that by faith Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. Well, we do read of that at the end of Genesis 50, that it literally was as he was dying. You think of all those famous last words. Well, what Joseph wanted was to be buried in the land that was sworn to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, his fathers. And so he made them promise that when God did bring them out of Egypt, that they would take his bones with him, which even that request to me seems to indicate Joseph knew it's going to be a long time. My body is going to be bones by the time God brings you out of here. And it was so. And so when Moses led the people out in Exodus 13 and verse 19, they took all the plunder of the Egyptians, gold, silver, clothing. They took their flocks, their herds, and their livestock. But it says, and Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. They knew, we're not coming back here. We're going to the promised land. For 40 years, they carried those bones through the wilderness. For 5 years in conquering the land, they carried those bones with them. When Moses died, apparently they were transferred over to Joshua, because in Joshua 24 and verse 32, it says, now they buried the bones of Joseph, which the sons of Israel brought up from Egypt. So he had great faith, even in the land that would become their source of affliction and slavery and bondage, that God would fulfill the promises he made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. May we have that same faith in the promises of God. Even when they are not fulfilled immediately, we trust that God keeps his promises.
Over the course of the heroes of faith that we've studied so far, I've really enjoyed seeing how they parallel to Jesus. And we made mention briefly of at least one parallel between Joseph and Jesus. But they were both beloved by the Father, but then envied and hated and conspired against by their brethren without cause. They were both stripped of their garments and thrown into a pit or tomb. They were both sold by a man named Judah, or in Greek, Judas, for pieces of silver or the price of a slave. They both resisted temptation, but then were falsely accused. they both prospered in all that they did because the Lord was with them, but were then numbered with the transgressors, where they both promised deliverance to a man who was condemned to die. And after it all, they were both promoted to the right hand of the king and clothed in honor and glory, where all people would bow down to them, just as it had been promised. But of all the parallels, I think the greatest was the last verse we looked at, where at the end of their lives, they both made mention of an exodus and gave orders concerning their bones. Joseph spoke of his bones and the exodus of the Israelites from slavery to Egypt, but Jesus spoke of his whole body and the exodus of all people from slavery to sin and death by the power of the resurrection. And because of that, they were both able to say, "You meant this for evil, but God meant this for good, to save the lives of many." Brother Corey, thank you again for joining us and for those great thoughts on the faith of Joseph. Bubba, tell us who's up next.
Next, we have Brent Moody from the Southside Training Program, and he will be with us to talk about the faith of Abraham going into the unknown.
All right. Well, we look forward to next episode. We'll see you then.